Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The president doesn't. Sometimes you feel like a... That means that it is not illegal. Sometimes you do. Tear down this wall. Here's Johnny. Hey, Luke, may the force be with you. It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R. I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I've been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Dave Schwann, good morning to you, buddy.
Hey, Dave, good morning to you.
I like that we finally have some nice, decent weather going on out here, right?
Yeah. Are you kidding?
I know. We always lament for years, for 5-6 years, we always lament about the cold winters and so forth. And I finally feel like, you know, sitting
out. Getting longer and longer.
I know. Yeah. And it was
how long for it to take to actually get summer weather here.
But it was light till like 8:25 tonight. That was fantastic.
Oh, I know.
Right?
I know.
Yeah. This keeps you cheerier and stuff. Yeah.
And savor that because
I know,
a month from now, it won't be like
that. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that.
Well, I'm saying you have to get out and enjoy every moment of this because the summers are short here.
I'm sure there's some studies out there that show, because, I mean, you think about, you know, by 4:30 in midwinter, it's going to be, you know, the darker outside, that there's a four-hour difference of light going on out there, that there's got to be some issues, you know, psychologically with not having that brightness.
Well, this is why they have an actual legitimate name for something that's called seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah, I get a little of that. I get that.
I think people get more than a little of it. Yes.
Absolutely, yeah. And have the lighting and stuff in their houses to kind of compensate for all that stuff.
I can't imagine what people do in northern Scandinavia, Alaska, but
here's what I can't stand, though. I can't stand all the back-to-school ads. I'm not ready for this yet.
Like, I know. I've started to see them myself.
Kids have 3-4 weeks left. Like, give them a break.
Yeah.
You know?
It's still July, for God's sakes.
Yeah. We've got a bunch of fun stuff to talk about, including some cool summer stuff, but let's get into the history part of this. 1821 was the first edition of the Saturday Evening Post. Do you remember ever seeing this as a kid?
Vaguely.
Okay.
My dad said that my grandfather had a subscription to it.
Okay.
This was 1930 something.
I was going to say it ended in 69. So I mean it was around
But you know what's amazing, Dave?
Yes, sir.
All those Norman Rockwell illustrations for the Saturday Evening Post are still popular.
They're still wonderful works of art.
They really are.
Yeah. Yeah. For over 200 years, the Post chronicled American history in the making, providing art, entertainment, information in a mix of features. They would talk a little bit about medical trends and stuff like that, too, which surprised me. It wasn't all about nostalgia and so forth.
No.
Tracing its roots to Benjamin Franklin, the Evening Post mirrors cherished American ideals and values, most memorably illustrated, as you said, by Norman Rockwell. But they would publish stories, like literary stories from like Ray Bradbury, Agatha Christie, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Edgar Allan Poe, which was, you know, pretty groundbreaking for its time.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Well, it was one of those things that offered a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, this was way before TV.
Yes,
way before radio.
Absolutely. So that was entertainment.
It was entertainment, and you had to offer a variety of things.
Absolutely.
Information, news, fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A little bit of everything.
1882, the Standard Oil Company is established as a corporation in Ohio. It's the largest oil refiner in the world, owned by
John D. Rockefeller.
Yeah. Now, you know what's funny? So Standard Oil became Amoco, which became BP.
Mm-hmm.
I still have some Standard Oil stuff. Like, I have a lamp on my workbench from Standard Oil with the old logo with the flame on top of it and stuff.
I have to bring my dad to your house.
Yeah,
he worked for Standard Oil for 40 years. He worked for Standard Oil, then Amoco. Yeah.
I have a thermometer for the backyard.
Oh, you'll be his best friend.
From Standard Oil, I remember that, you know, that gas station growing up. Well, here's the funny thing, and we talked about this earlier in the spring. When BP got rid of the brand of Amoco altogether, they have brought it back. So now when you look in the northern suburbs, maybe elsewhere too, Curtis, you're shaking your head.
Where they are. I haven't seen it.
Winnetka, it's a very, it's the same type of logo, but look a little bit more contemporary and brighter.
It's the torch and oval, red, white, and blue.
Yeah, because I think BP said, well, you know what? You can't put two BP gas stations across from each other, but we could take some other brands that we own and do it so we can keep out the competition.
They brought back Amoco. Yeah. I knew they were doing it, but I hadn't seen any.
Yeah.
So that's where they are, northern suburbs.
The northern suburbs. But that brand still has value.
Sure, it does.
BP, to me, has less value than Amoco does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It stood for the American Oil Company.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. Let's see here. Comic strip Little Orphan Annie by Harold Gray debuted and was syndicated by the Chicago Tribune. So we did all the syndication across the country.
From over here on.
Mm-hmm. I still say we're part of the same company. I must have wrote this like eight years ago. But the strip retired back in 2012, and it, of course, became a radio program as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a little listen.
And then the musical.
And the musical. That's right. That's right.
Who's that little chatterbox? The one with pretty auburn locks. Whom do you see? It's Little Orphan Annie.
Very typical for the 1930s, right?
Don't you love that organ?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the organ.
Wow.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Well, we had pictures in the hallway here. You know, like, we did a lot of those old-time radio. Well, no, they weren't old-time radio shows. They were radio shows back then.
They were contemporary.
But there was a couple WGN organs. I think one of them still exists and is somewhere in a
That's what I hear. That it's at Bradley.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay. Wow.
I think that's where it is.
They should open the newscast with that. The old organ playing.
Harold Turner was the organist.
Yeah, that's the picture that I think is up on our walls here in WGN. Yeah.
Harold Turner was the gentleman's name. He and Bob Trendler were the musicians on staff. Yeah.
Bob Trendler of Bozo fame was the WGN, head of the WGN orchestra.
That was, head of
starting
the WGN.
Starting in the 30s.
Right. And then the Big Top Band was really later in his career.
It was a swan song.
Mm-hmm.
That was the end of his career for the
one other thing, since we're talking about this, did you know that Mike Hamernick's father, Don, was the drummer?
He was the drummer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I met Don. I don't know if Don's still around.
I don't know.
Yeah. But I met him. He might have played a Don Rickles comedy concert 10, 15 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
He was in the band because he was still pretty active.
Sure.
He was still pretty active.
Oh, yeah.
1957, American Bandstand began on network TV. In fact, there is a exhibit coming in October to the Broadcast Museum from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's called Stay Tuned Rock on TV, and it will be like costumes and stuff from like the Beatles on Sullivan, the Stones on Sullivan, the Jackson 5 in their first television appearance, Soul Train, but a lot of set pieces and memorabilia from Dick Clark's American Bandstand.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an interesting story about 12 years ago. I had gone to Los Angeles to go visit with Dick and look at some of the memorabilia he has. He had a really old home on Sunset Boulevard, like a really old, I don't even know what era that would have been, but those were his offices there. And he greeted us at the door, and that's the last we saw of him. And then his people took us through, and it was the original podium from the 1950s from American
From the Bands. Original show.
Yeah. His offices. He had several offices there. The memorabilia on the wall, the autographs, the first suit he wore on the air and stuff was all
so
in
So it was
there.
A real museum then.
Well, it was his offices.
It was his offices, but, I mean, you're talking about
it was a walk through history.
Program.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to have a lot of that at the museum, too.
It started with KDKA in Pittsburgh?
I believe it did. Yeah, it was in Pittsburgh.
And
That's
then
correct.
Syndicated
yeah.
by ABC.
1952 to 89, so even in my era in high school, like I was in high school from 81 to 85, This was a big show.
You're so young.
No, because Madonna was on here and stuff like this. Broke, even though, you know, you're talking about the Jerry Lee Lewis's and the Freddie Boom Boom Cannon, who made the most appearances on the show, 110. There were over 3,000 bandstands produced with just over 800 remaining in archives because a lot of them were live.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen, I'm sure music rights are an issue, but I would love to see those released. Or play,
oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah,
with all those
right,
performances.
Right. You know, growing up, it was always a kick around here in this area to see a band from Chicago or the suburbs.
Yeah.
Ides of March being a prime example.
Right.
Or the Buckinghams, the Cryin' Shames, you know, get on a national program like that.
That was a big deal.
It was always great to see
it
that.
It elevated them like that.
It certainly did. And I think the Buckinghams even made it on Ed Sullivan once.
That could be.
Yeah.
In the later 60s. Mm-hmm. What the clip, is this Madonna maybe? Dick Clark talking to Madonna on a bandstand? Let's take a listen.
Dick Clark. This is your life.
No, Dick Clark, this is your life.
One of today's outstanding television personalities. As master of ceremonies of two nationally televised record and dance shows, American Dance Band on weekdays from Philadelphia, and the Dick Clark Show on Saturday nights from New York City, you have a combined weekly audience of, let's say, 50 million Americans at
50
least.
Million.
You receive 50,000 letters a week from your teenage fans, which you answer through your Sunday column in This Week magazine. Circulation almost 12 million.
Those numbers are still huge.
Oh, God, yeah. 50 million people? Wow, that's pretty cool. Let's see here. 1970, we always talk about this every year, Dave. You're going to Poppin' Fresh was trademark registered by the Pillsbury Company. The Pillsbury, I think I still have a little like 7-inch Pillsbury Doughboy character I had as a kid.
That came,
you tore off whatever labels and sent it in, and you got the little Pillsbury Doughboy.
Oh, really?
And of course, he made that cute little sound. Let's take a listen.
Say hello to Poppin' Fresh Dough. Gives such a nice feeling to bake something fresh.
Poppin' Fresh Danish Rolls. Danish rolls just taste better when you bake them up fresh and hot. Try Pillsbury Danish in the dairy case.
It's such a nice feeling. Get to know Poppin' Fresh Dough.
There it is. right there. Trademark. Trademark. Oh, and again. There you go.
Perfect.
Nice job. Nice job.
Perfect.
Let's see here. Oh, 1974. It was August 9th, so we're a little early on this. But
Nixon
announced he was going to resign from office, which was, just a moment in time that, do you remember this?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That was, I had just graduated high school.
Okay.
Which, by the way, we're having our 45th class reunion next weekend.
That's cool. Where's that? What's high school?
Highland, Indiana.
Wow.
Highland, Indiana. Class of 1974.
Have you gone regularly to these?
I've gone to everyone.
Oh, that's great.
I've gone to everyone.
I've been to one, and I feel kind of regrettable, but my high school doesn't exist anymore, really.
Oh,
it was merged into another school, so it's a little tough.
No, but I've gone to everyone, and I was on the phone yesterday afternoon, talking about the planning for this with someone I've known since first grade.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so great. Sure, you're involved in this.
Yeah,
that's great.
But getting back to Nixon, I was taking a senior class that year in government, and Watergate was really coming to a head. So it was very much a topic of conversation in the news and in class as well.
And having your president resign. That never happened before.
And hasn't since.
Right. 1988. It was the first ever night game in professional baseball. It took place nearly 60 years earlier on May 2nd, 1930, when a Des Moines, Iowa team hosted Wichita for a Western League game. The match grew 12,000 people at the time, and they put on the lights. That was the first time there was baseball lights at a night game. At a night game in Iowa in 1932. Now, of course, for 74 seasons, the Cubs only played day games at home. You know, they never played a night game.
And they would call games on account of darkness.
Yeah, and I think there was going to be, in the right around World War II, they were thinking about putting lights in.
And then the war came, and that was everything.
It was scrapped,
put on hold for that.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, this weekend marks the 12th annual Blackhawks Convention. And the historic 10 years ago is when the Hawks took the Stanley Cup in the 2009-2010 season. So this is the 10th anniversary season.
Yeah, that's right.
Of that already, if
wow,
you can believe
10
that.
10 years already. Yeah.
Can I share some
yes,
fun?
Yes, sir.
So July 1st,
yeah.
We're past that.
Yeah.
10 years ago, that's when they signed Marian Hossa
oh,
to a 12-year
okay.
deal.
Okay, all right.
They also signed Thomas Kopetsky. Of course, they played in the Winter Olympics and Vancouver. A lot of people forget Jonathan Toews was named the most outstanding forward.
Boy, he's got this down.
I know. Listen to this guy. Yeah.
And, of course, Toews, Kane, Seabrook won gold. Kane won silver. That was the gold medal game in Vancouver, USA and Canada. Canada won in their home ice, so it was cool for Vancouver to celebrate that. And then they won. They had the only sweep of the playoffs, and that was in the Western Conference Finals against the San Jose Sharks.
And what an exciting – I mean, think about this season, though, how exciting this season was for the
yeah,
first time since
great,
1961,
great. Yeah.
I think it was.
Yeah.
We went to the convention, hung out a little bit with Steve Cochran, Ro Khan, Todd Manley was there, so was Dave Ennett, and I kept getting crap from throughout the entire evening from Tony Esposito because he saw my son. My son has some pretty crazy curly hair now. That's huge.
Yeah.
And he's
I
like,
saw the picture. And, with you.
And he's keep like, and he keep walking past me. What happened? Where's this coming from? It was so fun talking to Tony. He's the guy that I grew up with. Like Tony Esposito, mm-hmm. you know, is the era that I watched hockey with my father, went to games at the old
oh, you did?
Stadium.
You went to the
oh,
stadium?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
My folks have, they were season ticket holders for the Hawks before I was born. And when they tore down the old barn, as they call it, they each got a brick from the building with a golden plaque on it, official brick from the old Chicago Stadium.
There's a few of those floating around that families are selling now that you could catch on eBay. I've caught a few of them
yeah.
on there.
Probably won a pretty good buck for them.
I bet. But yeah, it was fun. And talked a little bit to Troy Murray, Patrick Sharp. I mean, it was a nice to just talk hockey a little bit. I mean, again, I don't want summer to end. I'm still way into the Cubs season and baseball and so forth, but it's great to get a taste of hockey and know what's to come. Here's the funny thing. When they did the opening ceremonies on stage, there was 15 to 20 kids that looked younger than my 18-year-old son that you're going to need to have a guide to find out who all these kids are. I mean, they're just all, they're kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of the team, I mean, you know, you think about, you know, Patrick Kane, he's 30, I think. He's the
yeah,
old guy.
He's becoming one of the veterans now.
He's the old guy now. And you see just all these kids up there. I mean, I hope they do well. I mean, this is going to be an exciting
You're talking
season.
About young players.
Yeah.
Kids. I think they were saying that the Hawks draft pick this year, Kirby Dach.
Yes.
He was 7 years old when they won their first cup in 2010.
That's crazy.
He was seven then?
He was seven
yeah.
then, yeah. He's a kid. I'm telling you, these kids are 17, 18 years old that were on stage.
Unbelievable.